You're listening to BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon, I'm Jasmine Shamsuddin, and autism is a neurological disorder that has an effect on normal brain function, affecting the development of the person's communication and social interaction skills. Now, many think that a diagnosis of autism means a child is doomed to a lonely life devoid of any accomplishments, but history has proven this theory to be false, and many people with the higher functioning forms of autism have gone on to do great things. There are some autistic people who, though may have struggled initially, can be an inspiration to children with autism and their parents. Now, this afternoon, we are very honored to have three people with a wealth of experience on autism with us to explore this area which has affected many of our lives. I welcome Peter Mitchell, the chief editor of the British Journal of Psychology, to the show.
It's great to be here again.
Associate Professor Dr. Teo Sien-Jin, head of psychology at Sunway College.
Good afternoon.
And, of course, Mr. Tay Beng Chun of the National Autism Society of Malaysia.
Thank you for having us here.
Welcome to the show, all of you. Now, before we start, I'd like to play a clip from the movie Forrest Gump.
Tom Hanks, I'm not a smart man, but I know what love is.
And Sally Field.
My boy Forrest is going to get the same opportunities as everyone else.
Never seem the same once you've seen it through the eyes of Forrest Gump.
My mom always said life was like a box of chocolates. You never know what you're gonna get.
Of course, Forrest Gump is a story of a man who rose above his challenges and who proved that determination, courage, and love are more important than ability. Peter, did you think Forrest Gump was autistic?
Personally, no, I don't think he was. I think he's somebody who had a learning disability. He was a slow learner. And he did have some autistic features. For example, he had some special interests, like he developed a focus on jogging and various other special interests. So he did have some features. On the other hand, he seemed to relate quite well with people, and he had some capacity to empathize. But if we think about the movie Rain Man, then there we see a really good depiction of autism. And it's a very, very well-informed depiction, actually. The role was played by Dustin Hoffman quite brilliantly. And the reason why it was so well-informed is because Hoffman himself, and indeed the producer of the movie, went to the UK to take counselling from Beate Hermelin, somebody who worked with Hans Asperger, the person who actually discovered autism. And the producer also worked with a colleague and friend of mine, somebody called Linda Pring, who's a specialist in savant ability. These are special abilities that we see in about 10% of the population of autistic people.
Right.
And Hoffman was, and the producer, studied very closely. They're able to follow very closely what they're informed by these specialists. And in consequence, Hoffman did an absolutely brilliant job. And that character, Rain Man, really did show some of the features of autism. Namely, somebody who was not really able to connect with other people very well, not really able to communicate, but somebody who had a focus on a special interest, and in this case, to do numerical calculations.
And did it extremely well.
Absolutely.
Okay, now autism, apparently, I don't know much about it, I must be honest, but it says here that it traps its sufferers in an isolated world. It's not that they don't want to communicate with the outside world, they just cannot. In fact, this neurological condition is a little understood disability here in Malaysia, one that often carries a social stigma. Mr. Tay, could you give us a brief on the current Malaysian scenario as far as autism is concerned?
I think right now a lot of work needs to be done because we are still getting children coming in for therapy at the ages of 8, 9, 10.
That's a bit late, isn't it?
Yes, that's pretty late. We wish that children can come in for therapy as early as 2 or 3. Our most recent, or rather a recent case that we had, was this man, 52 years old, who came in for assessment, and we found that he's actually a high-functioning autistic at the age of 52.
What made him decide to come in?
Because he was having so much difficulty in life. Uh-huh. And after the assessment, then everything seems to fall into place. He began to understand why certain things happen in his life.
Right. So you're basically saying the awareness on autism is not very, you know, well, I suppose, in this country.
Yes, it's still pretty low. We have been tracking since 2 years ago. For the Klang Valley, the age of first contact has dropped from about 5.6 years of age to about 4.3.
Okay.
So that is a good improvement for the Klang Valley.
All right.
But outside, especially in the east coast of Malaysia and in East Malaysia, we're still getting a lot of cases that are, you know, in their 8, 9 or 10 years old.
Right. Now, Malaysia is said to be lacking in research to, you know, assess the situation, to come up with a support system. Why is this the case, Mr. Tay?
I think there is a big lack of professionals who are well-versed in this field. Perhaps the other reason is because a lot of parents with autistic children are not sending their kids for therapy, and they're keeping them at home. So basically, we don't really feel that kind of urgency for a big study to see the incidents in Malaysia.
Okay. Now, a new screening tool is offering parents and doctors a quick way to assess a child's mental health. It involves a checklist of 23 questions that measure signs of autism. Dr. Teo, what happens to children whose scores show a higher likelihood of autism?
If they show a high likelihood of autism, it's recommended that they go for further detailed investigation. So the screening tool is just an indicator that you might have symptoms of autism there, because one of the reasons is that the symptoms of autism can often be mixed up with symptoms of other disorders like speech and language delay, which is probably the most common. And it's important for people to understand that autism is a collection of symptoms rather than just one particular symptom.
Right.
The most common one that people focus on is eye contact, but lots of people have no eye contact. It's not the only thing that you
go to any checkout counter and you'll see it. Okay, so Dr. Teo, how important is an accurate diagnosis?
An accurate diagnosis is really important, simply because if you've not made the right diagnosis, then in terms of treatment planning, you're off onto the wrong track. So, for example, if the problem is a speech and language delay, which is causing problems with social interaction and all that, and you think that perhaps this child is autistic, then you might not tend to focus on all the other features or the other important aspects of therapy, and you might also develop an unrealistic expectation of what the child can actually do. And when this sort of thing happens, it's very demoralizing for the parents who go from one therapist to another therapist, and they don't seem to be making any progress at all. And in the long run, where the child is concerned, the older a child is, and if they've not started on a correct form of therapy which is appropriate, then it becomes increasingly more difficult to shape their behaviors.
I see. Okay. Peter, the way this disorder manifests itself is different for each individual. How so?
Well, the core features of autism are impairment in communication, whether that's verbal or nonverbal, impairment in socialization, in other words, lack of ability to socially connect with other people, and impairment in imagination. So these are the core features that we're always going to see in everybody who has autism. But we can see autism with other features as well, apart from the autism. And in some cases, in many cases, we see associated learning disabilities. Another feature that we see in autism is a focus on special interests. Within the autistic spectrum, we see it ranging from low-functioning autism, where the individual might not even be able to communicate in language, to high-functioning autism and Asperger syndrome. Asperger syndrome is a form of autism where we see the impairments, as I've just described, in communication, socialization, and imagination, but the individual might not show language delay. The individual might show normal language development, even though they find it difficult to communicate socially.
When you say difficult to communicate, can you give us some examples of this?
Well, I think it's a good question, because people naturally assume that it's easy to communicate.
Yes.
They assume that you can just start talking and it's going to make sense. But in fact, communicating is one of the greatest intellectual feats that we see in humans. Namely, you have to make a very accurate judgment at the kind of information that your listener needs to have, and you need to give information that's not too little and not too much. It's something that we learn over childhood. There's a protracted period of learning, and it's a skill that we have to hone, and then as adults we do it quite well.
Right, and it's not just words either, it's body language.
Absolutely.
Eye contact, facial features, yeah. All of the whole, I suppose, spectrum of communication.
Yes. Yeah, it's about actually connecting with people, mm-hmm. and connecting with people includes all of those kinds of skills. So we see this great spectrum in autism, as Dr. Teo said. We see this collection of different abilities and lack of ability, and these can present themselves to various degrees. But if we're seeing this core impairment in socialization, communication, and lack of imagination, then it could be that a diagnosis of autism is warranted.
Okay. Dr. Teo, what happens if there is a misdiagnosis, especially in milder cases?
In milder cases, it would be the same problems that you would encounter, as I said before. Then you would begin to have unrealistic expectations of what the child can do. So if you think that this is just some socialization thing, and you're trying to force the child to socialize, take for example in the case of Asperger's syndrome, and they're really, really not very keen on socializing, even though they seem to be high functioning, then the therapist gets fed up, the parents get fed up, and the child gets really, really frustrated. And so an unrealistic expectation about therapy is usually what happens.
Okay. A follow-up question to that is that, is autism a lifelong neurobiological disorder?
Yeah, generally we find that if a person is born with some autistic features and tendencies, they tend to live with these things throughout the rest of their lives. Certainly, MRI studies have shown that when you compare the brain of an autistic child versus a non-autistic child, the language and communication areas of the brain don't seem to be so active in an autistic child as compared to a normal child.
Would you say then the aim of treatment and therapy programs is to help people with autism function as near normal as possible?
I tend to be a bit more specific. It's quite difficult to explain or define what normality actually is. And we tend at a very elementary stage to talk in terms of daily living skills. Things like, can you brush your teeth? Can you make simple gestures? Can you make requests? Now, when they get a bit older, some of these skills may not seem very normal in comparison with children of the same age or even of adults of the same age. So the expectation here isn't so much about normality, it's about getting them to be able to look after themselves.
Okay, so when is the best time for intervention?
Starting as early as possible.
Right.
Generally, at least from a clinical point of view, you can already start seeing things by 2 to 3 years old.
Not earlier?
You might notice some difficulty with much younger kids, let's say below a year and a half, but sometimes it may be to do with the language really, really being delayed and all that, and it becomes much more obvious at about 2 and above, when they really, really, really are rejecting everything you say, or the child is so frustrated and they can't get anything done, so they start throwing temper tantrums.
Okay.
So these are some of the early indicators. So it's a bit fuzzy and blur at a much younger age, but certainly by the age of 3 years old, it becomes very, very evident.
Okay, so what does this intervention entail? And do we have enough professionals in this, I suppose, in this area to support the number of autistic children that Malaysia now has?
Actually, the answer is we are lacking in trained professionals, and we even before we can talk about an intervention, we're lacking in professionals to even diagnose and do proper developmental assessments. And that's something we're really, really trying hard in this country to train more people to be able to do. And certainly where the government is concerned, in the health departments and Ministry of Health, they're beginning to produce clinical practice guidelines and procedures as to how to do this properly, so that there is a conventional way of doing things rather than guessing and making slip-ups.
Okay, in case you've just joined us here on The Bigger Picture, I'm Jasmine Shamsuddin, and today we are talking about autism in Malaysia with Peter Mitchell, the chief editor of the British Journal of Psychology, Associate Professor Dr. Teo Sian Jin, head of psychology at Sunway College, and Mr. Tay Beng Chun of the National Autism Society of Malaysia. When we come back, we'll find out a little bit more. In the meantime, of course, if you have any questions for our guests, do send those via SMS to 016-201-9000, BFM 89.9.
You're listening to BFM 89.9, the business station.
Today, we're talking about autism with Peter Mitchell, Dr. Teo Sian Jin, and Mr. Tay Beng Chun. Now, Peter, many people fail to understand that autistic people, like everyone else, have feelings too. Could you elaborate?
I certainly can. In fact, I can shed some light on this from research that we've been carrying out in my laboratory at Nottingham University, which is that we've been using an eye tracker to investigate the eye movements and the focus of attention of people with autism. And some of the findings that we've been obtained have been published recently in the Journal of Autism and Developmental Disorders and the Journal of Experimental Child Psychology. Now, Dr. Teo was saying earlier that one of the typical features of autism is unusual eye movements. And one prominent theory has said that people with autism find it quite difficult to read psychological information from the region of other people's eyes, and moreover, that they find it quite difficult to follow people's gaze direction, and therefore they're denied the opportunity because of this to share attention with another person, focusing on a particular event in the world. Well, we've been investigating this possibility with our eye-tracking laboratory, and what we've discovered, and what's been published in these journals recently that I mentioned, is that people with autism seem to be delayed by a fraction of a second in following cues of other people's eyes. It's not that they can't follow eye movements. It's not that they can't interpret psychological information from the eyes. Rather, it's that they're delayed by a fraction of the second. In contrast, what they do seem to be very good at doing is focusing attention very quickly on physical events in the world, even more quickly than people without autism. So it's quite a remarkable contrast between people with and without autism.
Okay.
Now, the problem that people with autism have then is that when people are interacting with them, these people get the sense that the autistic person they're speaking to is not listening and doesn't really care what they're saying, because they're a bit slow to respond to social cues. And in consequence, in answer to your question, people often get the feeling that people with autism don't really have feelings, aren't really socially connected.
It's like talking to a wall, I've heard someone say.
That's right, yeah. So that's the problem. But in fact, I think people with autism are really very sensitive. It's just that they're a bit slow at processing social information.
So on that note, how would you then communicate with perhaps a child with autism? Would you allow him some space to process what you're saying and what you're, you know, communicating to him?
This is what we need to investigate in the future. But my gut feeling is that that's exactly what we need to do. We need to be a lot more patient with people with autism, and a lot more understanding. And I think our understanding now of patience is going to give children with autism every opportunity to start to learn about the social world. Because if they're actually communicating with people who have no patience, that don't want to speak to them, then the children with autism in turn are denied opportunity to learn about the way people communicate, about the feelings that people are typically conveying.
All right. Mr. T, NASOM experienced a 30% increase in their intake for autistic children over the past 3 years, and your waiting list is actually getting longer every day. Is this due to awareness, or is there an increase in people suffering from autism?
My guess is that it could be a combination of both. We don't really know. To give you an example, I received a call yesterday from a total stranger who told me that his son is autistic. And I asked him, how did he get my number? He said, oh, I met a lady in a function, and she actually pointed out that my son could be autistic, and she gave him my number.
Okay.
Said, okay, that's very interesting.
How did she get your number?
It goes to show the awareness is actually getting better. Yeah. Whether there is actually an increase in the numbers, we don't really know, because there has been no research done locally.
Okay. There has been no research or evidence to show that the MMR vaccination given to children can cause autism, but how sure are we? Perhaps Dr. Teo can take that one.
I don't think I could comment on that.
Okay.
Simply because there are a lot of vaccines and a lot of drugs which, when taken during pregnancy, and substances, are associated with a whole wide range of other disorders other than just autism. So it's really, really difficult to pinpoint whether this is the main cause or not. So it'd be really difficult to comment.
Okay, and I think not a lot of people want to comment on it, especially from the medical industry. No comment
on that.
Okay, now Peter, autistic children are brilliant. For one example, though it's not been proven, of course, some speculate that Albert Einstein may have had high functioning form of autism. Because he's no longer alive, there is no way he can be diagnosed. I do believe his brain is somewhere in some museum somewhere in Ohio. I could be wrong. But what does this link tell experts like yourself?
Well, not just Einstein, but possibly Newton as well, the greatest physicist ever. Possibly also, many figures in history.
Geniuses, really,
some
right?
Geniuses, yeah. But we see in around about 10% of people with autism, these special, what we call savant abilities. Most people with autism don't excel quite to this degree, obviously. But in around about 10%, we see savant abilities. And the question is, what does this tell us about autism? Certainly what it tells me is that people with autism have a very considerable intellect, like everybody else, actually. They have a great intellect. And for most people, they're channeling this great intellectual capacity into understanding the social and psychological world. And they connect and are able to communicate with other people very well. That's in the case of normal people. Mm-hmm. For people with autism, they are denied that opportunity through the disorder that they have, but they still have this very great intellectual potential. And for some of them, my hunch is that they're able to channel all that intellectual energy into understanding something in the physical world. So we see this focus on the physical world in some people with autism, and because of that concentrated effort, we can see development of expertise in those areas. In some cases, like the case of Einstein or Newton, then we can see absolute genius.
Wow. Dr. Teo, are there high chances that an eccentric person could be autistic?
Well, one of the keys is to look at the degree of socialization that the eccentric person is interested in. So if they are communicating really effectively, they're able to read, write, and all that, and they don't really want to socialize with anybody, and they kind of like shun socialization, then there might be a possibility that they are high-functioning autistic. And we certainly do see this in children with Asperger's syndrome. Then on the other hand, if they have language disabilities and all that, and they're not really very communicative with people, then, and they seem eccentric, then we have to ask ourselves, is these problems with socialization due to a language deficit, or is it due to something else like autism? So there are many, many areas that we would need to look at.
Okay. Peter, how important is parent participation in the therapy of the autistic child?
It's a matter of the very highest priority. Mm-hmm. But the main, or the first obstacle that the parent has to overcome is the natural tendency to deny that there's a problem and to deny that their own child has autism. autism is actually a much more common disorder than we thought. It's probably at the rate of around about 1 per 100 of the population. And that's based on a study that was published in The Lancet in 2006 by Professor Charman and colleagues from London University. It suggests that the rate of autism in the UK is about 1 per 100. It's probably the same in Malaysia, though we don't know because the relevant study hasn't been carried out. But if that's true, there's probably about a quarter of a million people in Malaysia who have autism. Now, in most of these cases, it's quite possible that they're undiagnosed, as we've already been discussing. And even if it's diagnosed, it can be quite difficult sometimes for the parent to come to terms with this. You know, they might be inclined to think that the diagnosis is wrong or that people misunderstand the child. The child's just unusual.
Special.
And of course, the child is special. There's no doubt about that. But the first step here is that the parent needs to recognize that the child is different by virtue of the diagnosis or the problem they have. And that doesn't mean to say the parent necessarily needs to be thinking that they've got to cure the child necessarily or make the child into a normal child. No, that's not necessarily the case. The parent just needs to understand the strengths as well as the weaknesses of their autistic child to perhaps help them to adapt to their weaknesses, to help them to build upon their strengths. And the parent needs to work with organizations like NAISOM and work with clinical practitioners to bring this adjustment about in the child.
Right. If intervention starts early, Mr. Tay, how long would therapy take? This is a lifelong thing or, you know, how does this work?
I think if the child comes in early, the chances of the child being able to function effectively is pretty good. We have seen a number of children who have gone on to school, normal schooling, with support, and they do very well in school. So the really key thing is to bring the child in early and also to have properly trained people to work with the child.
Okay. Dr. Teo, if an autistic person does not receive enough support, what would happen?
Well, if they do not receive enough support, I guess they would lose out on a lot of skills that they could learn. I mean, that's if they are a child. So speech, for example, would be even more delayed. They would not be able, they would have a lot more difficulty looking after themselves. And in cases where there is a possibility that they could go on to some form of schooling, they would be even more at a disadvantage. Because as I said, we find after a particular age, and usually it's about 6 to 7 years old, that it becomes increasingly difficult to begin to train a child if they have not already learned some of the basic rules about following instructions and that sort of thing.
Okay. Mr. Tay, we lack trained people in this area of autism. We've mentioned this earlier. Where would be the starting point for a Malaysian parent seeking help for their child here?
I think the first thing would be for the parent to bring the child to a properly trained or qualified professional to draw up a treatment plan and then follow through with the plan.
Okay. Now, earlier we established that there are not that many who are qualified and trained. So how do we find these people?
Well, for this reason, NAISOM actually started a diploma in special education, majoring in autism, about 10 years ago. And through this program, we are actually training specialist teachers. Yeah.
So NAISOM could be one place to start,
yes.
Yeah? Are there treatment options for adults who have been suffering from autism? Dr. Teo?
Well, they're not very popular in the sense that we find very few cases of adults actually coming forward or being brought forward by their caregivers and saying, look, is this person autistic? So that's, and because of that frequency being so low, there are not that many treatment options. However, if they do come forward and it's suspected that they may have autism, there is still hope. Okay? There's something that can always be done for people and they can move forward, but it doesn't, but what we do not promise is that they'll be able to lead what we would call a normal life.
Yeah, we can't establish normal anyway, so so I'd like to know, Mr. Tay, you had a 52-year-old gentleman come in and diagnosed. Is he, you know, getting any treatment, or is he just happy to know that he's confirmed that, you know, all this while he's suspected he was autistic?
Well, after the initial assessment, he didn't come back.
Okay.
Yeah, that's the unfortunate thing. But perhaps he's getting good support at home, or he could have gone on somewhere else to seek treatment.
Okay.
But at our, we run a one-stop center for autism where we have a multidisciplinary team comprising of psychologists, speech therapists, occupational therapists, physiotherapists, and we have a team there, and we do conduct social classes, behavior modification classes, speech therapy, and that sort of thing. It is available.
Yeah. Now, I understand, Mr. Tay, that you are an accountant by qualification. You've contributed to the National Autism Society for Malaysia, of Malaysia, for the last 8 years. You've also presented numerous papers on the autism spectrum disorder. What actually led you to champion this cause?
I'm one of the lucky parents who have an autistic child. That was what actually brought me into the world of autism. Before that, I didn't know one single thing about autism.
Right. Yes. Okay. So how much would it cost the average parent or family, I suppose, to look after an autistic child in Malaysia?
I think it depends on the degree of severity of the child, which then requires different forms and degree of treatments. Yeah, but we have actually heard of parents who have sent their children all over the world to seek solutions, and that can be very costly.
Yeah.
I think locally, the additional cost can be quite high. Just a few months ago, I was talking to one parent, and that parent has been religiously keeping track of how much it has cost them to provide therapy for their child, and it came up to almost 800,000.
Wow.
And the child is only 19 years old.
Yes, I also recall speaking to another parent who mentioned it wasn't just the financial burden, it was the emotional and the physical, I guess, you know, part of caring for an autistic child.
Yeah, the other part is also the effect on the siblings.
Yes.
Yeah, that also adds up to the cost.
Okay, what is your advice then to parents who suspect their child could be autistic?
I think they have got to take very urgent steps to get the child properly assessed so that there can be a treatment plan.
Okay. Is NASOM present in all states in Malaysia?
Right now, no, but we have 19 centres throughout the country. In most states, we have a presence in most states. At the present moment, I think in Peninsula, the only states are Perlis and Terengganu, where NASOM do not have any centres. But we are planning to open up in Terengganu, hopefully soon. Over in Sabah and Sarawak, we have a centre in Miri in Sarawak. In Sabah, we are working with an associate partner based in Kota Kinabalu.
Okay. How does one get in touch with NASOM or the National Autistic Society of Malaysia? Is there a website?
Yes, we have a website, which is www.nasom.com.
That's NASOM
.com.my.
Okay. I'll be repeating that in a short while. Before we let you go, any last words, Dr. Teo, on autism in Malaysia?
Well, we've just done a pretty large study on stigmatization of children with mental disorders, which encompassed about 6 states in Malaysia. And one of the things that we're finding is that when people feel stigmatized, they don't step forward for therapy. And an important message that I would have for people is, don't stigmatize against anybody who's got mental health problems or mental illness, whether it's autism or it's something else, but instead be constructive and suggest gently and advise them to go and get an opinion as to what the problem actually is. I guess that would be the most important thing I have to say.
And Peter, what would your take-home message be about this topic today?
I would echo what Dr. Teo's just said, actually, because if we think about the way autism's been perceived in the UK over the past few decades, in the 1960s it was regarded as a rare disorder, maybe one per 10,000 of the population. Now, as I said a few moments ago, it's recognised as being present in one per 100 of the population, and it's probably the same in Malaysia. That's not to say that autism is increasing in its numbers throughout the population. No, that's not what's happening. What's actually happening is that there is a wider recognition of this disorder. As far as Malaysia is concerned, it's a disorder that's not widely recognised at the present time, but it's still present in the population. And the reason why it's not widely recognised is because, well, people don't know much about it. And when parents find they have a child who has a problem, perhaps the problem is autism, the parents might feel embarrassed, some sense of shame, and they try and hide this, they try and cover over. And that's really not going to help the child. They need to come to terms with it and accept it. So in the society generally, we need to have a wider recognition of autism and other developmental disorders, and that way, that's the best way to help the children.
Okay, finally, Mr. Tay, do you feel the government has been supportive in trying to educate and make aware about autism in Malaysia?
Yes, I think the government has been very supportive, at least towards NASOM's efforts. In fact, a few years ago, they gave us a large grant to carry out several projects. I think what is most important here that I have personally observed, for a child with autism, although there is no known cure, but we have seen many cases where the outcomes are very good. But in almost all of these cases, the good outcomes came with very high degree of parental participation in the child's improvement. And parents with children who are autistic or any kind of special children needs to really get involved and really help the child. But this has got to be done with perhaps guidance from people who are properly trained to deliver treatment.
Wonderful. I thank you all for joining us today on The Bigger Picture.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And of course, we were talking about autism in Malaysia with Mr. Tay Beng Chun of the National Autism Society of Malaysia, Associate Professor Dr. Teo Sian Jin, Head of Psychology at Sunway College, and Mr. Peter Mitchell, Chief Editor of the British Journal of Psychology. Of course, for more information, you can contact or find out about NASOM, the National Autistic Society of Malaysia, at www.nasom, that's NASOM, nasom.com.my. This is The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
BFM 89.9, The Business Station.